was the one who'd switched with me on the ship. But soon, a few Blue Spring girls recognized me. I heard gasps of, "Tamsin! It's Tamsin!" Some hugged me, and I returned the embraces gladly, but my eyes were elsewhere, searching and searching. The next time I heard my name shouted, it was by a voice I knew and loved. Everyone else in the room seemed to fade as Adelaide appeared, her eyes enormous and disbelieving as she stared at me. Maybe she thought I was a ghost. The next thing I knew, she was hugging me, clinging so tightly that she must have thought I'd disappear again if she wasn't careful. "Oh, Adelaide," I felt myself crumple, unable to find any words that could convey what was in my heart. Adelaide held on to me, and suddenly Mira was there too, hugging us both. All three of us cried. Adelaide recovered the powers of speech first. "Where have you been, Tamsin?" Her lovely face, always so filled with mirth and wit, held a pain I'd never seen in her, and it tore at my own heart. "Where have you been? We thought... I wiped tears from my eyes, but more promptly took their place. I know. I'm sorry. I wish our letter had gotten through, and I'm sorry for everything back in Arsfrid. No, she interrupted. You have nothing to apologize for. By that point, Jasper had apparently joined the throng and tracked down answers. He stomped on the floor to get everyone's attention, his face glowing. He hopped onto a chair and exclaimed, "Friends, friends, you're witnessing a miracle right before our eyes. Something none of us thought possible. I've just learned that, as you can no doubt tell, the Grey Gull wasn't lost at sea. It sustained great damage in the storm and was blown off course, far, far north to the colony of Grashund. Who do I have to thank for this? Who do I have to thank for saving my girls?" After some shuffling, Gideon came forward and introduced himself, explaining how briefly their community had taken us in. Jasper fawned over him like he would his own son. Actually, I was pretty sure I'd never seen him show so much affection to Cedric. Gideon tried to deflect the excessive thanks, saying, "It was simply our duty under Euros." His eyes looked past Jasper just then, meeting mine. I turned away. Jasper wasted no time. He offered accommodations to the heirs, promised to meet with the sailors, and set the house's caretaker, Mistress Culpepper, to seeing that we received rest and refreshment. "And now that their journey is over, I'm sure they'd like to change out of travelling clothes and into their finer wares." That was when we had to deliver the news that most of our fancy evening dresses were gone. After some initial surprise, he took it more in stride than I'd expected. "Well then, I'm sure we can put together a wardrobe from the other girls, especially the ones who are engaged." I wondered how well he'd take it when he saw how much else was gone. Mistress Culpepper assigned us bedrooms, and I was, of course, put in with Adelaide and Mira. The three of us closed ourselves away, still breaking into spontaneous hugs, and ever on the verge of tears. We'd barely sat down on the beds when a visitor knocked. A girl I didn't know entered with an armful of green dresses. "You were the Emerald, right? I inherited your spot, but I don't need these anymore, now that I'm engaged." I thanked her and looked over the pile of organdy and silk after she left. She had been named the Peridot back in Arsfrid, and then rebranded an Emerald here, since the gems had similar colours. The Peridot wardrobe was a shade lighter than my Emerald one had been, but it was still stunning. Green is my best colour. I'd longed for these clothes so much, but now it was nothing compared to seeing my friends. I shook my head, remarking, "To tell you the truth, I don't care what colour I wear anymore, so long as it's not this blasted cheap wool." Adelaide and Mira had all sorts of questions, and I couldn't blame them. If my friend had come back from the dead, I'd want to know everything too. But the rush of energy that had spurred me here this morning had drained away, and all the exhaustion of coping with Constancy, the Ikori, Jago, and Gideon came crashing down upon me. I didn't even know where to begin. I answered in vagaries, and Mira, at least, picked up on my mood. She suggested I change and clean up, and when I came back, I could tell she'd had a talk with Adelaide. They pulled back on their interrogation, but the suggestion that they were ready to hear my story any time always lingered. As for me, I was ready for their story. And after food and rest, I found my energy restored. I felt like a new person, but maybe that was the green silk poplin. The spark I'd felt last night when I'd walked away from Gideon flared up in me again. I was ready to claim my fortune and fight for Mary. "It's late in the season, but I plan on making up for lost time," I told Mira and Adelaide. "I hope you've left some men for the rest of us. You must have both gotten slews of offers by now." Mira's lips twisted in a half-smile. "Not that many in the way of, official ones, but I feel optimistic about my future." That was a typical Mira answer. It was nice that some things didn't change. I looked to Adelaide, expecting more because of her chatty nature and diamond rank. "What about you? There's no way you haven't had all sorts of offers. Have you settled on some promising young man?" The silence that met me was unexpected, but not nearly as unexpected as the story that eventually poured out of the two of them. Adelaide had found a young man, it seemed. In fact, she'd found him long before setting foot in Adoria. Cedric Thorne. With a dreamy expression, she explained how they'd unintentionally fallen in love and finally decided to stop fighting their feelings. The scene I'd arrived to this morning had, in fact, been part of the fallout of Jasper discovering the relationship the night before. He, Charles, Cedric, and Adelaide had been having a meeting about the scandal and had been unexpectedly joined by Adelaide's leading suitor. "His name's Warren Doyle," Mira explained. "He's the governor's son." I sat up straighter. I knew that name. He was one of the handful of men Esme Hartford had claimed wasn't opposed to a wife who'd been previously married. In her letter, she'd mentioned his parents had tried to arrange a marriage with a young widow from a minor noble house, but that the woman had ended up accepting another offer. Esme had also mentioned his father was governor, but the rest of Mira's remarks were unexpected.
"And he's about to become governor of his own colony. He seemed pretty infatuated by you, Adelaide.
He couldn't have taken it well.
I'm sure Jasper didn't take losing the money well either."
"He actually offered to help us," Adelaide said. Mira leaned forward.
"Jasper?
Sorry, no. Warren."
"Warren's going to help you and Cedric, after finding out that you were already in love with someone else the whole time he was courting you."
Mira's face said she didn't believe that for an instant. "What happened?" Adelaide took a deep breath.
"Cedric and I can get married, with conditions. His father and uncle won't advance us money to cover my contract, but Warren will. He says he doesn't want someone who doesn't love him in return, and would rather cut his losses by recruiting upstanding citizens for his new colony. So we're going with him to Haddison next week. I'll find a family to board me in exchange for housework and teaching their children. Cedric's going to work a gold claim. He'll get to keep some of the profit, and Warren gets the rest. When the contract's paid off, we can get married and go somewhere else."
It was something of a relief to see that Mira looked as flabbergasted as I felt. Of course, she was probably shocked at the new arrangement. Me, I was still stuck on something else.
"What were you thinking? You turned down a future governor for, what, an impoverished student?"
Adelaide made a face.
"Well, he dropped out of the university, and he's not impoverished. He's just, without assets. But I'm sure that will change."
This would have never happened if I'd been around to look after you, I announced. Mira, how could you have stood for this?
Mira looked embarrassed. I had no idea, she said.
You're her roommate. How could you not?
Neither had a good answer. My friends hadn't faced the threats I had over the last several weeks, but they'd fallen into trouble nonetheless. Would things have been different if I'd been here? Maybe. My protective instinct wanted to believe they would have been, but after a while, I wasn't sure. Adelaide was Adelaide, always dreamy and following her heart. Mira was Mira, caught up in her own quests. And later, when Cedric came to welcome me back and discuss plans with Adelaide, I grew more certain there was nothing I could have done. They were head over heels for each other, and in hindsight, I realized they had been back at Blue Spring, too. I was glad Adelaide had found love and wanted her to be happy, but it was unsettling to think of her going off to the fringes of Arsfrid's colonies. Haddison was even less settled than Grashand. It was mostly rural, lacking some of the most basic amenities. An isolated gold claim would be taxing and dangerous. But Haddison's governor... I needed more details, but I was certain Warren Doyle wouldn't be living in a claim shanty. He had his family's money in addition to a governor's income, and, according to Adelaide, already had a house built in Haddison's one city. Eventually, those gold claims would pay off, and the colony would prosper. A governor's wife could live very well. A governor's wife could have a lot of sway in how things ran. And a man accommodating enough to help when the woman he wanted was in love with another might have exactly the nature needed to accept a widow and her daughter. As Adelaide, Cedric, and Mira continued their conversation, my thoughts raced. I'd gotten off track in a lot of ways in Adoria, far more than just geographically. I'd joined the Glittering Court with an agenda. Find the most advantageous situation to protect Merry and elevate my family. I'd been single-minded in that pursuit. I'd been ruthless. And then I'd let love entangle me with a man who couldn't offer any of those things. After that, I'd chosen a man who offered the promise of idealism and self-respect. That had also gone horribly awry. Attempts at love and affection hadn't worked for me, so it was time to stick with my original plan, the one guaranteed to best help Merry. A husband and the life he could offer me had to be a matter for my head, not heart. So, this Warren, he's available then, right? Everyone stopped talking and looked at me. I suppose so. Adelaide said uncertainly. It had to be weird, talking about the man she'd been trying to keep her distance from. And he's motivated to find a wife, but he's only got a week left before he leaves. I couldn't help but smile at everyone's bewilderment. I'd apparently been gone so long they'd forgotten I was the Tamsin who got things done. 1 week. That's all I need, I told them. Chapter 32. Would you do me the honor of a dance? Excuse me, I was just about to ask Miss Wright to dance. Well, I beat you to it. It could have been Shebale's dream all over again, except this time it wasn't just in my head. This was real, tangible, and it would not end in disaster. I'll have plenty of time for a dance with each of you, I said, holding out my hand to the first man. But no more than that, I've already had other offers. 4 days after my arrival in Cape Triumph, I felt as though I'd been here for ages. The austerity of Grashand and harshness of roadside travel seemed like something that had happened in another life, not this one, filled with comfort and entertainment. I'd had 2, sometimes 3, social engagements each day. A nighttime event was a given. There was always some party, dance, or formal dinner. Daytime activities varied. Teas, luncheons, simple social calls.
All of them required meticulous care in appearance and charm. I couldn't slack in anything. Damaris joked that this new life was more exhausting than the hard labour of Grashand. It was work, in the sense that I pushed myself relentlessly. I flipped back into the mode I'd had at Blue Spring. Ever vigilant, always looking for an opportunity to advance. I thrived in the momentum of it, both because I had Mary's security within my grasp, and because if my mind was focused on advancing into high society, it had little room left to ruminate on Jago, Gideon, and the Ikori unrest. "There's something I've been wanting to tell you," my partner, Mr. Page, said. He shifted his grip a little. His palms were sweaty. "And I hope it won't seem too forward." I looked up with what I hoped was coquettish surprise. "Why, whatever could you mean by that?" He swallowed. "Well, after we were seated by each other at yesterday's luncheon, I haven't been able to stop thinking about you, and I realized last night that we have a profound, soul-reaching connection, I'm sure you noticed. And I want to spend the rest of my life with you. Will you marry me, Miss Wright? I can speak to Mr. Thorne right now if you'd like." "Mr. Page, I had no idea you'd even noticed someone like me." I'd known perfectly well, and suspected his intent when he approached me tonight. "Naturally, I was captivated by your many charms, and I'm overwhelmed that you'd show me such regard." "Then you accept," he exclaimed, face lighting up. "Being your wife would be a dream come true, I'm sure, but I can't accept, not yet." He stumbled, but I effortlessly kept us in time with the music.
"What?"
"Well, I've already had some offers, and I have it on good authority that there will be others. I promised Mr. Thorne I'd hear all of them out. It's only fair, isn't it?"
"How many more do you think there'll be?"
"It's hard to keep track, and some of them are from truly lovely gentlemen who've offered more than my contract price." Mr. Page didn't comment on that, which I'd expected. Anything I couldn't find out about a man's background and finances from talking to him could be learned from Jasper. I studied up on everyone in my free time. Mr. Page was doing well, but there were others doing better, and that came through in what they were willing to offer. He wasn't off the table yet, but he wasn't an immediate yes either. If I was going to play this game, I'd play it to win. I'd learned my lesson in the dangers of sentimentality and would be all calculation and strategy from here on out. "I'll, of course, keep you at the top of my list. I'm very fond of you, as you know, but I simply must wait. I hope you understand."
"Of course," he said, trying to hide his disappointment with a weak smile.
"I knew you would. You have such a kind and open nature. I saw it right away." When the dance ended, my next partner didn't immediately materialize. Rather than feel affronted, I welcomed the lull as a chance to breathe deeply and let my face rest a little from smiling. I strolled toward one of the many elegant refreshment tables, coming up alongside a man in a dark coat whose back was to me as he stared into a wine glass, lost in his own thoughts. Recognizing him a few seconds before he noticed me, I decided to try a bold approach to get his attention.
"Excuse me, you seem to have run out of the rosé champagne that was here earlier. Could you go back to the cellar and bring some more?"
Warren Doyle turned toward me, eyebrows raised in astonishment. I gasped.
"Mr. Governor Doyle, how embarrassing. I hope you'll forgive me. I thought you were one of the servants."
His expression turned wry.
"Nothing to forgive, Miss Wright. That's what I get for skulking over here, I suppose."
My heart raced, not from true embarrassment, but from nerves. Of Esme's eligible gentlemen, only two were actually eligible anymore. Warren was one. The other was out of town with an unknown return date. While there were likely other suitors I wasn't aware of who'd be amenable to a widow, I no longer had the time or luxury to investigate new possibilities. And of those I found, it seemed unlikely any would beat out the prospects a future governor held. Unfortunately, He was leaving soon to lead his expedition to Haddison. He and I had been formally introduced at a recent party, and although we'd had a lively discussion, I hadn't walked away with the sense I'd piqued his interest. It wasn't through any fault of mine, I was certain. I got the impression he was too distracted by his upcoming responsibilities to pursue a wife, particularly after the disaster with Adelaide. "Well, don't let me interrupt your skulking," I said, reaching for a glass of red wine. "I'll take this and be on my way." Warren caught hold of my hand and moved it away. "I can't really do that now, knowing you'll be pining for champagne all night. Besides, it's excellent. I toured Varia a few years ago and had my fair share in Lorendy." "You there, excuse me." He waved down a passing servant and requested the champagne with the self-assurance of someone who was used to getting what he wanted, quickly. As he spoke, I covertly studied his features. Chiseled face, sleek black hair, a head taller than me. Yes, he was the way to win this game, if I could only pull it off in time. After he'd sent the servants scurrying away, Warren turned back to me. "If you can bear the agony a little longer, he says he'll track some down. And if he doesn't, then I really will become a servant and handle matters myself." I averted my eyes, wishing I could force a blush, though that wasn't a skill I'd ever managed. "I'm still mortified about that. Thank goodness no one overheard." Taking my hand again, he led me toward the other dancers. My spirits soared as he said, "You can make it up to me with a dance." Just then, inconveniently, my missing partner ran breathlessly up to us. Mr. Wells nodded a greeting at Warren and quickly turned to me. "I'm so sorry. I hadn't noticed the song had ended. Shall we?" Warren pointedly put a hand on my waist. "I had just asked her to dance. Didn't realize you'd staked a claim, Howard. There's always the next dance. Let that be a lesson on attentiveness." Mr. Wells was left behind, and I couldn't help a laugh. "Are you mocking that poor man?" Warren asked. "No, no. I'm just thinking he got off easy, as far as lessons on attentiveness go. Up where we were staying in Grashand, that sort of lesson would have involved copying pages of scripture, not missing out on a dance. Well, actually, they don't dance." Warren's eyes grew thoughtful. "I still think it's incredible you spent so much time with those people. I'll be honest, it sounds terrible." "Not all of it, and we're certainly grateful for their kindness." "There's a way you say kindness that makes me think there's a story there." "There are several. If you want to hear them, you'll have to schedule time for another day." "Do you even have any?" he asked with a laugh. "From what I hear, you're pretty in demand. A friend of mine was saying he regrets settling for one of the girls in the first group." I glanced away, feigning interest in the other dancers. "Well, it's lucky you didn't make that same mistake now, isn't it?" I held my breath, wondering if I was being too bold, but he chuckled again. "So it seems. And I suppose I was lucky to be mistaken for the help just now, too." "Hush! You said this dance settled that. But I am surprised you would be skulking, as you put it. If it's not too forward of me to say, you're about to march off in triumph to your own colony. It seems like you should be the centre of attention tonight." He sighed, the amusement slipping away. "Oh, I could be, but I don't have the time. I don't really have the time to be here, period. Not with all that I have to do. But my father wants to show me off, so I'm going through the motions." "What all do you have to do? I'm good at getting things done, and will help you if I can. Not that I have a lot of time myself, of course." That brought a return of the smile. "Of course. It'd only bore you, I'm afraid. Just the endless logistics of leading people who are constantly demanding one thing or another from you, and then have the audacity to be offended when you have no time to lead." I didn't have to fake my scoff. "Mr. Doyle, you've clearly forgotten how I spent my first 6 weeks in Adoria. Now, tell me one of your problems." "Okay," he said, after scrutinizing my face.
I'm having trouble keeping regular supplies coming into Haddison for the settlers there. Most came with their own goods, but those don't last forever. You can't imagine how hard it is getting respectable shopkeepers to settle out in the wilderness when they can stay comfortably, say, in Archerwood and earn a steady income. Easy. Money motivates people. So offer them a better than steady income. By letting them price gouge? Certainly not. And I don't have extra funds to offer incentives. No need to give what you have. Give what you don't. Tax breaks, favorable trade regulations. It costs you nothing and keeps your settlers around and hopefully attracts more. Warren stared off for a few moments, face speculative, before turning back to me. That's an elegant solution. An absurdly simple one. And that's a jab at me, not you, because I should have thought of it. Well, remember, I was actually spending time with traders in the wilderness not so long ago. A sudden longing for Jago stopped me. My host's home, filled with velvet upholstery and rose-scented candles and burnished fixtures, became suffocating and superficial. It was a world away from sitting outside in Jago's sleigh, surrounded by endless land and fresh, crisp air. A knot formed in my chest. Miss Wright? Tamsin? Warren prompted politely. What were you saying? You ran into traders during your trip? I pushed aside the mental image of hazel and green eyes and fixed my attention on Warren's dark ones, slipping back into form. Oh, yes. Traders and just about every other kind of people in Adoria. I don't suppose your next problem is recruiting Balanquins, Ikori, or the heirs of Euros to Haddison, is it? I have a bit of expertise there. I'm sure you do, he said with a grin. I still can't believe you travelled with the Ikori. I still can't believe they let you, given the stories I've heard about them attacking our people. His brow wrinkled as he considered it further. Weren't you and the others afraid of them? Not of the group we travelled with. Besides, we had our own soldiers along for protection, although they probably needed protection from us. Their leader, Lieutenant Harper, had a few admirers, to put it mildly. A good friend of mine was especially devoted. It made for an interesting trip. I laughed prettily and expected him to pick up the cue and ask for juicy details, but he wasn't quite there yet. Harper came here with the Ikori. No one told me that. When I heard he was in town, I assumed he'd come to ask for backup on the border against the Ikori. Typical. My father loves bragging about how I've become a governor, but he still insists on treating me like an underling. The scowl on Warren's face took me aback, though I could tell I wasn't the target. Keeping my tone light, I said, No one who meets you would ever think of you that way, and there's no need for Lieutenant Harper to ask for backup. The way I, hear it, there was some misunderstanding about the Ikori attacks. He's been working toward peace with Kerniel, so that's good news, isn't it? Warren, apparently still irked at the perceived slight, didn't process my question right away. When he did, he sighed, and the dark expression smoothed. I'm sorry for that outburst. It just caught me off guard to hear about this. I need to know these things to do my job. When I'm out of the loop on something, then others get an edge you don't have, I supplied. He looked me over again, but this time I felt he was really, truly seeing me. Yes, you understand that, how important it is to get an edge sometimes. I shook my head. Mr. Doyle, I believe it's important all of the time. Something sparked in his eyes, but before he could comment, a man in grey approached deferentially, a pink bottle in his hand. Sir, I have the champagne you requested. The song ended just then, and Warren glanced around. How's that for timing? Open it over there and bring a glass for the young lady. Thank you. To me, Warren said, can I join you and share another dance? It took all of my self-resolve to say, as lovely as that sounds, it'd be unfair to Mr. Cambridge over there. He made his arrangement hours ago. Unfair? It'd be downright cruel from the looks of it, Warren remarked, following my gaze to where the aforementioned gentleman shifted from foot to foot, eyes wide and hopeful, though he was too timid to intrude on Warren. Perhaps it's for the best. I can leave now to get some work done without my father's censure. He's not even here tonight, but word always gets back to him. At the mention of the elder governor, Warren's tone grew bitter. No doubt he's off collecting more information to keep from me. If I'd known about Harper sooner, I would have pushed harder for a meeting and set him straight about the Ikori. It's difficult scheduling time with the officers these days, and now it's too late. A chill ran over me at those words, and ignoring Mr. Cambridge and the champagne-bearing servant, I caught Warren's sleeve and asked, "Set him straight? How?" Warren hesitated. "I know you're friendly with the Colonel Ikori, and I'm glad of that. I'm glad they treated you decently. But I hear a lot of things. You know about the patrols I run." I nodded, not trusting myself to comment. There'd been growing unease about heretics in the colonies, and Warren had personally organized patrols to investigate reports of illegal religious activity. A year ago, I would have endorsed it, if I'd even given it much consideration at all. The dissident Alanzan group had strange practices, such as worshipping outdoors, and keeping them away from ordinary followers of Euros seemed right. Now, after my time with the Ayres and Gideon, I was starting to appreciate how those with different beliefs might have valid reasons for their choices, even if I didn't share them. "Most of those patrols stay in Denham, but we get around the neighbouring colonies too. And I've heard rumours of Ikori in the north and the south spying and planning a joint attack. The clans in South Joyce have already stirred up trouble. And in the north, there's another clan, the Kernady, over the border, farther up by the Balanquins. There are all sorts of reports of their raids. Maybe the Colonel aren't involved with them, I hope not, but Harper and the rest of the armies are fools not to watch that area. Who knows what could happen if all those clans united? My friend Dale Eubanks was up in Bakerston and talked to actual victims." "You hear a lot of things," I said, surprised. From what I'd observed in Cape Triumph, most of Denham was oblivious to the outer colonies' affairs. "I have to stay informed. I'm not insulated like these colonies. My citizens are out there on the borders. They're the ones at risk. My father can brush these rumours and reports aside, but I can't. I don't want to wake up one morning and find Ikori raising White Rock. But you shouldn't be burdened with this." Almost chagrined, he took my hand and kissed it. "Thank you for the dance. I hope we can talk again before my trip." I stared after him as he walked away, and Mr. Cambridge scurried over. Unlike our last meeting, I believed that this time Warren really did want to see me again. "I saw that kiss," Mira said later, as we rode home to Wisteria Hollow. "Things must be going well." She sat beside me in the coach, wearing crimson silk. I'd seen her dancing a couple of times tonight, but I'd been too preoccupied with my own conquests to think much about hers. I didn't get how she wasn't being flooded with offers. She was smart, beautiful, and kind. Being Seminican shouldn't matter, especially with such a shortage of women. One would almost have to purposely dissuade suitors in her situation. We'll see. I definitely made headway. I settled back into the seat, suddenly aware of my sore back and feet. "But what about you? Why don't you have more than that elderly man pursuing you? Suitors should be lining up for you." "They're all in your line," she teased. "But seriously, don't worry about me. I'm fine." I put an arm around her, still overjoyed just to be near her again. "It's hard not to. I never know what you're going to do. Just please don't go tramping off to some gold claim on the fringes of society, like Adelaide." "You're telling me that?" Mira dissolved into laughter. "Isn't that your whole goal with Warren?" "He manages the gold claims," I corrected.
There's a difference. And he lives in a real house, not a tent or shed or whatever it is Cedric has.
Yes, but... Never mind. Mira rested her head on my shoulder. I'm just so glad you're back and safe.
Our party had run late. Most everyone else was going to bed when we reached the house. I was eager to sleep as well, but had to stop by Mistress Culpepper's office first to direct her attention to a tear in my cloak that had happened when an inebriated gentleman stepped on it. As I was returning through the foyer, I spotted a man in a familiar uniform preparing to leave. Lieutenant Harper, I didn't expect to see you here. Is everything okay? He glanced back from the door and smiled at me.
Oh, Miss Wright, it's nice to see you again. And all's well. I was just,
His eyes lingered on the staircase a moment.
Just in the area, and thought I'd stop by.
I tilted my head to better study him. He almost looked like he was blushing.
Were you? You weren't here to see Damaris, were you?
Yes, he was definitely blushing.
I like to check in on everyone. You, for example. How are things? You've been out tonight?
I wavered a moment, and then let him get away with his change in subject, largely because of where it might lead.
Yes, every night. It's non-stop. And you know, I just heard the most puzzling things. Is there another group of Ikori north of Kerneal?
The Kernady? Lieutenant Harper's expression instantly sharpened.
Kernady? Why?
Someone was telling me about them tonight. That they're conspiring with Ikori in South Joyce for a joint attack.
There have been a lot of raids in South Joyce, yes, though I am suspicious they might be fabricated by the Lorandians too.
His earlier fluster was completely gone now as he turned over my words.
I hadn't heard anything about a plan with the Kernahi.
Who told you this? Warren Doyle. He's anxious about Haddison being caught up on the outskirts. He said his friend Mr. Eubanks knows more.
Harper's eyes knit in thought.
Eubanks. I don't know the name, but I don't know a lot of people here.
If he's in Doyle's circle, he's probably easy to find. I could talk to him, but the McNamara sisters seemed sincere in wanting peace.
They're one group, I pointed out. And we know, well, the group that raided the fishing camp wasn't Lorandian. Maybe some of the stories are true. I could see my dismay reflected in him.
I don't want to believe it either, but I'll look into it. Thank you for telling me, Miss Wright. It's kind of amazing you can still keep track of political tensions while having your head in all of this.
He gestured around us. I can't help it, I said. I keep track of everything. Not long after my encounter with the lieutenant, I encountered Warren at a party on another day, one he couldn't avoid since it was a going-away celebration. He was surrounded in well-wishers and all sorts of important colonial citizens who'd turned out, and as I made small talk with other suitors, I mulled over how to politely interject myself amidst his admirers. But when he noticed me, he promptly separated himself from the throng and headed in my direction.
"I was hoping you'd be here," he said, eyes eager.
I hadn't expected such a promising reception, but I ran with it.
I figured as much, Mr. Doyle. That endless flattery must get so boring. Do you want me to send you off on an errand or two?
The grin he gave me was filled with genuine delight, and it lit up his perfect features. It was easy to admire his striking appearance, but it didn't stir the same warmth within me that Jago's multicoloured eyes and crooked smile did.
"You can send me off on more than that," Warren said. "Is it true you talked to Lieutenant Harper for me?"
I took a moment to respond, uncertain of where this was headed.
"Well, I ran into him this week, and the Ikori came up while we were talking. That's all."
Warren shot me a knowing look.
"That's all, huh? You can play coy as much as you like, but your casual conversation with him got the message through that I was hoping for. Harper convinced the garrison here to dispatch troops south to investigate the stirrings there, and he's going to send some of his own men up near the northern Ikori to keep watch there." The unabashed admiration reassured me I'd done nothing wrong, but the news still startled me. Those were big actions, and I wasn't sure enough about the Ikori's involvement to feel comfortable with the military moving in. Hiding my shock, I said, I'm used to making men jump when I talk, but I never expected to send armies on the move.
All in a day's work for you, I imagine, he said with a laugh.
Certainly, it might actually be the one thing I've done that the heirs approve of. Maybe it'll buy the lieutenant some goodwill with them too.
Didn't he have it before? Most people say he's pretty charismatic.
He is, but charisma doesn't always get you far with the heirs. And they weren't happy he didn't take action against the Ikori sooner. He also made a few thinly veiled threats about calling their practices into question with the crown. Now Warren wore the shock.
Did he? That's pretty serious. The whole point of the colonial charters is to let each one set up its own laws and ways, without Usfrid's interference. Have you heard about that new West Haven colony, where people can practice any twisted religion? If that's free of oversight, surely Grashan should be.
I am a little biased, I admitted, seeing as the heirs tried to starve me and wanted to cut my hair.
You... what? Really?
Maybe some oversight is warranted. Your hair is divine, you know.
But is that something they run into a lot? Friction with the crown?
Sometimes, I said. The delight of having my hair called divine was a little unsettled by the intense tone of the question. I mean, they're not openly antagonistic. Usfrid is there to take care of us, after all.
Yes, of course, he said, relaxing a little. But sometimes it's in a heavy-handed way. Remember my infrastructure problems. Much of that is because the Crown's taxes sweep away half of our gold income. And then I'm left to figure out how to build roads and schools with their leavings.
That does seem unfair. I started to frown, but then caught myself. I didn't want wrinkles, or to sound like I was talking treason. Well, whatever comes of it, I'm sure you're clever enough to find a solution.
I hope so. But if I'm not, I'm sure you are.
The note in his voice was unmistakable. I went very still and tried to keep a serene expression.
That's sweet of you. Of course, I'm not the one who's a governor.
No, but I think you could be invaluable to someone who is.
He took my hand, and I lowered my gaze to look at it, lest he notice me hyperventilating.
You weren't kidding about getting things done. You have a mind for the logistics of managing others. You persuaded an officer. You understand the situation in northern Adoria better than most people who've lived their lives there.
I had myself under control now and looked back up at him. Mr. Doyle, you know I'd listen to your flattery all day if I had the time, but I've already seen half a dozen young men trying to catch my eye. I'd hate to think you were wasting my time when you know very well how in demand it is.
Oh, I'm aware, he said with a laugh, and I'll get to the point, because I know you like that. And that's something I like about you. I also like that you are unattached, and it would mean a lot to me if you stayed that way for the next 2 weeks. Once I've seen my charges settled in Haddison, I'll be coming back here by the water route. It can be done in a day, you know.
I nodded. Haddison's position on the western side of Denham Bay made it an easy trip across the water if you were just trying to get a boat or small ship over. The shore on that side was rocky and unpredictable, so large parties of people, animals and supplies, like the one leaving tomorrow, had to go across land, cutting through Denham on a 10-day route, not far from the one I'd taken, coming from the East Sister.
If we weren't leaving tomorrow...
Warren's face grew momentarily wistful.
Well, nothing to be done about that now. I'll be back before you know it, and then we'll have plenty of time to discuss things. And by we, I mean you, me, and Jasper. Do you think you can do that? Hold off on any decisions with someone else? Can you take it on faith that I'll make the wait worthwhile?
It was getting hard to breathe again. My free hand was clenched in a fist, and I chastised myself for being so silly. Get a hold of yourself, Tamsin,
I mentally scolded. This is what you've been waiting for. You're on the verge of making it all worthwhile. All the sacrifices with Mary and Jago.
It was Mary who steeled me to proceed. But it was the wistful thought of Jago that made me unexpectedly say, Can I take it on faith you'll think of me once in a while during that time? You don't have to be madly in love with me. Not that I could blame you if you were, but I'd hate to think you were pining for my friend Adelaide those whole 2 weeks.
Surprise flickered in Warren's eyes, replaced quickly by amusement.
Nothing to pine over. I wasn't in love with Adelaide. I see that now. She's a lovely, accomplished girl, which is what I was infatuated with, her standing. But I've come to realize she isn't what I need to govern Haddison. I need someone who stays fixed on a goal, someone always looking for an edge, someone who understands that respect and shared vision get you farther than rampant emotion.
I did understand that, though a nagging part of me wondered just how far you could get with love. But I ignored that part and unclenched my fist. Meeting Warren's gaze unblinkingly, I responded airily, Well, since you're being so charming about it all, I suppose I can hold off on any decisions until you return. But just so you know, I'm not going to stop taking callers or invitations. Warren brought my hand to his lips, the kiss lingering longer than before.
I'd expect nothing less.
Chapter 33. As excited as I was for the Haddison expedition to depart, so that Warren could return and finalize matters, I dreaded it too, because it meant losing Adelaide. My dismay went beyond a selfish desire to keep her close. I worried for her safety as well. The evening before she left, I attempted one more earnest talk. Adelaide, I know it all seems like some grand adventure right now, but I've spent the last month and a half on the edges of the colonies. Living like that was hard for me, and I grew up in tougher conditions than you did. She looked up from a bag she was packing and gave me a wry grin. Are you saying I can't handle it? I studied the belongings spread out on her bed before answering. Heavy leather boots, plain but durable blouses, wide-legged suede pants. Earlier that week, Mira and I had gone with her to buy attire for the trip at a store specializing in wilderness gear. It was owned by a man they'd met on their voyage, one Grant Elliot, who hadn't much impressed me with his gruff and blunt manner. But he did seem like the kind of man who'd seen his fair share of rough situations, and the fact that even he thought her impending adventure was a harsh one hadn't been lost on me. I'm saying I remember you trying to do things like wash dishes and build a fire when you got to Blue Spring. This'll be worse than that. And have you ever slept on the ground before? No, but I'll only be doing that during our trip to Haddison. Once we're there, I'm boarding with a family who already has a cabin ready to go. I'll have a bed. It won't be like this bed, and you'll be surprised at how many ordinary household things you take for granted once you don't have them. Adelaide closed the bag and stood up, stretching. Are you trying to talk me out of this? You think I should just tell Cedric it's over and stay here? Well, not when you put it like that, but I'm just worried about you. It'll be hard, not just the labour. There are all sorts of dangers on the frontier, and it's not like there are a dozen stores around the corner to buy what you need, I added, recalling Warren's supply issues. If something runs out, you may be waiting a very long time. I'll have to go without, I guess. Or maybe if I hope hard enough, some peddler will stop by. Aren't they out there? The joke made her smile, and she didn't notice I winced. But whatever waiting there is, no matter how hard, I have to do it. I know it sounds crazy. I wish I could help you understand. I love Cedric. And I'd rather have him than a house full of luxuries. Again, I didn't answer right away. I'd first been jealous of Adelaide for her refined background, then for her diamond status, and now, I realized, I was jealous that she got to be with a man she loved. It wasn't the type of envy that wished her ill. I wanted her to be happy, truly. But I couldn't help but compare myself and think how I had lost a man I had loved. Taking a deep breath, I reminded myself that I still had the one I loved most, Mary. And maybe, one day, respect and a shared vision could lead to more with Warren. "I just want you to be happy," I said at last. "If this is what you want, then I want it too. And if there's anything I can do to help you secure that happiness, just tell me." "Oh, Tamsin!" She nearly knocked me over with a massive hug. "And if I can help you find your happiness, I will. Not that you'll need it. You've always got everything under control. You really will get the best position for yourself, just like you've always said you would." I swallowed back my own tears. "Was there ever any question? Now, ease up there, because you're wrinkling that silk, and I've got to be at an important party in an hour." I saw her, Warren, and Cedric off the next day. Their caravan departed from the gates of Cape Triumph amidst a sea of fanfare and well-wishers, and I cheered them on. The prospective settlers headed out with hope in their faces, some well off already and hoping to expand their success in this new territory. Most of the others looked as though they'd had little success of any kind in their lives and were now staking all they had left on this enterprise. After Mira and I returned home, the long wait began. 2 weeks. 2 weeks of hoping Adelaide and Cedric would make the journey safely and continue to stay safe once in Haddison. 2 weeks of hoping Warren didn't change his mind about me. I held true to my word about not accepting any other man, but did still ensure I had plenty of backup choices. My delay in Grashand hadn't ruined my prospects, and I had a shortlist of half a dozen suitors who could support me and my family and whom I also liked reasonably well. I even managed to tease out of some that they would have no qualms about marrying a widow, so that was a relief. One way or another, Mary's future would be secured. At last, I heard during an afternoon tea that Warren had returned to Cape Triumph via the bay and that the rest of his party was safely settled in Haddison. I breathed a sigh of relief for Adelaide and Cedric, and then I spent the rest of the day anxiously awaiting any news from Warren. It came the following afternoon when he showed up at Wisteria Hollow and asked to speak to Jasper. I hovered at the top of the stairs as Warren entered the house, and as soon as he and Jasper were locked away, I ran back to Mira in our bedroom, hardly able to contain myself. "Do you know what that means? He's going to make an offer. This could be it, what I've been waiting for." Minutes later, I was called too. After a quick check in the mirror, I put on a calm countenance and walked serenely into Jasper's office. "Hello, Mr. Thorne. It's nice to..." "Mr. Doyle, what a pleasant surprise. I hadn't realised you were here. How was your trip?" Warren waited until I was seated before taking a chair himself. "Excellent. Everything was on schedule. Everyone is doing well. Including Adelaide," he added, guessing my thoughts. I beamed. "I'm so glad to hear that. It was nice of you to come give us an update." An amused glint in his eyes told me he knew that I knew there was more to his visit than that. "Mr. Thorne tells me you aren't engaged or married, which is a considerable relief, because I have an offer for you." I clenched my hands and swallowed. "Oh?" "I'll be returning to Haddison in 2 days, by water, and would like you to come with me and tour the area." "Oh." "White Rock is coming along nicely, and my own home is quite comfortable, but Haddison is still a rather wild colony. I wouldn't want my wife to be shocked or feel like she'd been misled by the time it's too late. So, come as my guest, see what Haddison is all about, and then, if you approve, we can have a further discussion." I relaxed a little. It wasn't as good as an outright engagement, but it was promising. "One of Mr. Doyle's associates lives in White Rock with his wife, and she'll come stay with you at the governor's house," Jasper continued. "So you'd have a proper chaperone." I nodded along. "Of course. I wouldn't have presumed otherwise.
Then you'll do it? Asked Warren. I was afraid after the rest of your adventures, it might be too soon for you to plunge off into the unknown.
Mr. Doyle, I am ready to go right this moment, if needed, I told him, head held high. Especially if I don't have to sleep in a tent or wear unfinished wool. After a few more details, Warren left, and Jasper held me back.
Tamlin, I expected great things from you, but you've surpassed my expectations. You've secured more prospects in 3 weeks than girls who've been here from the beginning have, and not just any prospects, one of the very best. Warren's hinted that he'd be offering more than your base contract post. There'll be enough to cover your debt.
Then you think there will be an officer?
I'm positive of it. I think he's taking this extra step for propriety's sake. I've seen men propose after one meeting, but an engagement looks more serious if the couple's actually had real time together.
I understand. Thank you for all of your help.
Jasper stood up and opened the door for me. Honestly, this was all you. You're the one who won him over so quickly, but that was probably nothing after all you did to get the other Grey Gull girls here, even if it did cost me some goods.
It was hard to keep a straight face at his dry tone. I am sorry about that, sir, but believe me when I tell you, it could have been a lot worse.
I do believe that. Loss is part of business. One has to expect the unexpected. Say, like, when your diamond throws away amazing opportunities.
His face settled briefly into a scowl, then smoothed.
Well, what's done is done. I'm just thankful you aren't like her.
Thank you, sir. But as I walked back to my room, I found myself wondering if I should really see that as the compliment he'd meant. The day I was scheduled to leave for Hatterson banished any concerns about Adoria always being cold. The weather had already been steadily warming in my time in Denham, but I awoke that morning half believing it was summer already. By noon, everyone was sweating, and the humidity made me feel like I was wrapped in blankets. Mistress Culpepper and Miss Bradley were beside themselves, trying to keep everyone powdered and sweat-free, but it was clear early on that the battle might be hopeless. More than half of the girls were engaged now. A few had already married and left. Most of the attached ones came from the early group, but some Grey Gull girls already had fiancés. Other than the very elderly gentleman, Mira had had no one show serious interest, which worried me. She seemed restless and agitated, and I wondered if her romantic situation was finally taking its toll. When I hinted at that, she looked totally surprised.
What? That? Oh, no. That's all fine.
Then why are you pacing like a trapped cat? She abruptly stopped said pacing, not seeming to have realized what she was doing.
Other things, she said evasively. And I'm worried about you, about Adelaide.
I crossed my arms and walked to the window. Well, the only thing you need to be worried about for me is if Warren's actually taking me to Hatterson. It was well past the time he was supposed to have arrived, and anxiety was eating me alive. I wandered the house, saying hello to those preparing for evening engagements. All the while, I was constantly peeking out the windows. It was one such moment, with my back turned, that Gideon seized a chance to sneak up on me.
Hello, Tamsin.
I closed my eyes a moment, and then turned around with a cool smile. I'd been doing an excellent job of avoiding him. He and the heirs were still around, and no one knew when they were leaving. The girls who hadn't lived with them in Grashand were complaining about how odd they were, little knowing how much worse it could be.
Hello, Mr. Stewart.
His eyes made a quick assessment of me. I probably bore little resemblance to the Tamsin back in Constancy. Even my travelling clothes were luxurious. A green velvet riding habit consisting of a full skirt and a form-fitting jacket with a scoop neckline edged in gold. A plumed hat decorated with the same golden lace was tied with a silk ribbon over my hair, which I'd worn loose today. The other heirs had made no secret of their disapproval of the outfits paraded through Wisteria Hollow, but something told me Gideon didn't mind them.
I wish you'd call me Gideon again, he said.
When I didn't respond, he shuffled his feet and glanced away.
You look very nice. You're sailing to Haddison today?
Yes.
With the governor's son?
With the governor of Haddison.